Welcome, 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 all of my AOWs. I know I've been doing that thing again. I haven't been getting out my podcasts on time, and I absolutely apologize. I have come to, I think, like another inflection point where I have become so incredibly busy. If I don't get some help and get some support, I'm going to fall off in terms of my consistency and, of course, my promises to you. And I actually love doing the podcast. Of all of my different mediums, you know, there's social media, right? So Instagram, TikTok, I love those, but they're really short sound bites. And I have to be really, really careful in those short sound bites. So I have to think really hard. I should do behind the scenes someday of like how long it takes me to get like the right shot with the right tone, with the right things that I want to say, with a little bit of, you know, on the fly thrown in there. And podcasting for me is like my therapy. So you guys know, if you listen to the show religiously, I pour my heart out on here, and more so even in the last few weeks. With, of course, the annual Menopause Society meeting. And now I'm actually traveling up to Canada. I'm traveling to Toronto for World Menopause Day. I'm going to be doing on air on the social on CTV. And then the following day, I'm going to be with Dana Levinson on the DL Live. We're going to be doing our first live together. And along with that, I've been launching some new products that I have. I've just been doing all the things. I've been doing, a lot for World Menopause Day. So I've got lots of talks coming up and just lots of just meetings like bah. And of course, my patients. And I'm really, really just loving life. But if you didn't know, and actually it's funny, I don't know that everyone knows. I feel like everyone knows everything about me. I'm pretty much an open book, but I don't have any editors, any virtual assistants that do any of my social media. I know, it's crazy. I literally do it all by hand. And that's why if you are someone who can see a spelling mistake from a mile away, you know. So anyways, it's probably time that I consider getting some support so that I could sit down, I can talk, and then this goes off into someone's hands and they upload them and edit them all for me and et cetera. But anyways, so I have been a busy girl and I'm sorry that I haven't been able to get my podcast out every week. It's always my promise. It's always my goal. And truth be told, of the content that gets devoured the most is actually over on my show. And it's incredible. And I love the support and I love that you guys love the show and I love doing this show. So the show will never stop, but thank you again for your grace. Okay, on to today's episode. So it's going to be World Menopause Day, Wednesday, October 18th. So by the time you're listening to this, this is either the day before or the day of. And I mean, it's just been a complete month of celebration and we've really increased awareness of menopause so much. And I'm so, so proud of that. Today, I have with me Dr. Corinne Men. We are also going on the Pause Life Retreat together with Dr. Mary Claire Haver at the end of January. So I'm so, so, so excited for that. So you'll probably see us collaborating on a ton of content together. And we just totally vibe. So when we sat down to do this podcast, it was the first time we had a long time to just get to sit, the two of us. And we're just soul sisters. So you're going to absolutely love this show. We're doing it in two parts. So this will be part one. I will be back next week, fingers crossed, for part two. And I hope you really love the show and enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to Health by Heather Hirsch, a podcast dedicated to uncovering many of the women's health issues many of us are wondering about, but few of us are talking about. My mission is to expose the current gaps in knowledge and care on all things women's health. Enjoy.
If you love the show and you're dying to work with me, there is a couple of different ways that you can do so. First, I have an incredible menopause course. It's called the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. And don't be fooled, it also is for women in perimenopause. In this course, I teach you how to thrive. It's my signature method to help you figure out what HRT regimen is best and right for you and how to make adjustments and then how to get this from your own
doctor. Now, I also see patients in my private telemedicine clinic. I have a license in several states and I'm always working on more. You can go to my website, heatherhirschmd.com, to find out if you want to take the course and join our incredible Facebook group with monthly lives or work with me one-on-one. Now, I hope I get the chance to work with you. And thank you so much for listening to the show. I am so excited that Corinne is joining me today, and we have some really fun news, and that we're going to be on the Pause Life Retreat Cruise together, hosted by the one and only Dr. Mary Claire Haver. And that is happening in January. I will link in the description notes the links to book for the cruise if there's any seats left. Anyways, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to connect.
I know. And we were just chatting before we got on, as we do. And I mean, we just chatted the whole half an hour away. So there's just so much we need to cover. And this will probably end up being like a two-part series. And I'm really excited about that. And what is so unique and interesting about you is your clinical perspective as a physician, and as a breast cancer survivor. And I want to give you the floor to tell your story. It's not for me to tell. And, tell my listeners here just a little bit about you, who you are, and kind of the story that shaped the amazing physician that you've become.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, my experience being a patient, you know, completely shaped how I practice medicine and really the trajectory of my life. So in many ways, my breast cancer is my silver linings playbook, I like to say.
Aww.
So it's true. Because this could take a whole bottle of wine and a whole lot of time, but I'm going to give you it in a nutshell. 2001, I was age 28, newly married, second year OBGYN resident in New York City, felt a small lump in my breast. All my fellow OBGYN female residents were like, it's a fibroadenoma, Corinne. You're too young for breast cancer. You're fine. Just watch it. Just watch it with a couple cycles. Fast forward, my mom was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer suddenly, and she passed away 2 months later of ovarian cancer. And at her funeral, it was terrible. And at her funeral, I said, wow, I should probably get that breast lump checked out. So a few weeks later, and this is one of the first lessons I've learned, how not to deliver bad news to a patient. I got a page in the middle of prenatal clinic.
No.
And they're like, sorry, Corinne, it's cancer.
Oh my gosh. No, 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 no.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's
no.
Yeah. It was really bad. So then, I threw my pager across the room, and there was, a little mommy in front of me who didn't really speak very good English, and I'm hysterical crying. And Heather, the very first thing I thought was, not that I'm going to die, but I'm never going to be a mom. Because I was newly diagnosed, or only 1 year married. Married to my college sweetheart. So we've been together for a long time. So he was my rock. My program, OBGYN program, got me through it. My husband got me through it. And fast forward, bilateral mastectomy, egg retrieval with tamoxifen prior to chemotherapy, premature menopause from chemo times one, periods came back, went on tamoxifen, got off the tamoxifen, got pregnant, had a baby.
Holy moly.
Periods came back.
My brain is thinking about your hormone levels.
Yeah. Then they put me on Lupron for a little bit with tamoxifen. Just why not? Suffered, was like, this stinks, refused that, just stuck with tamoxifen.
Lupron is,
yes.
Wow.
Chose to then grow our family through adoption. So adopted another baby. And then when we were done with her adoption, chose to have my ovaries taken out. So then menopause number three, surgical premature menopause, completely unprepared for as not only personally, but just even professionally, because in my OBGYN residency, as you know, I had very poor training in menopause care. There was literally zero, and no one knew what to do with a breast cancer survivor. So I suffered and then learned along the way, because I had to help myself. And then I started to just see lots of patients dealing with similar symptoms, maybe not all breast cancer survivors, a lot of them just your average perimenopausal and menopausal woman, but I understood. And so they had a 33-year-old looking at them being like, oh, I totally get the whole, you can't have sex and vaginal dryness and you're up all night. They're like, how do you know, Dr. Men? I'm like, well, let me tell. So yeah, that's how I kind of came to focusing my practice eventually after doing full-time OBGYN and deliveries and all of that to just doing GYN office-based stuff. And now just only doing exclusively telehealth for, you know, menopause and premature menopause and breast cancer survivors, really the focus. So
that is jam-packed with so much physiologic disruptions, trauma, terrors, exciting things, scary things. Like I hope you need a doctor. Like I know you have a good one, but like that is no straightforward case right there. And I literally just want to give you the time and space to be like that happens. And that's so much. And I know we use the word trauma and triggering like a lot.
No, it was traumatic.
Yeah.
So PTSD in breast cancer survivors. And I would say there's PTSD involved with severe abrupt surgical or premature menopause for any reason. It's a real thing, you know? Yeah. And I think it's not really recognized. I like to say like, you know, survivorship is really like a marathon. It's not a sprint. And there's so many things involved in like living your life after breast cancer or really after any significant life event. But the medical system's not very well equipped, as you know, and you talk about every day.
I know. And I'm so glad that one of the reasons I actually selfishly love podcasting is like, I just get to hang out and meet all the people that we've been talking on social media together and, you know, get to meet quickly at conferences. And now we just get to sit and really like dig into these things together. So I think because there's so much that I want to ask you and unpack, and I think you are a great, not only expert clinician, but also you come with the patient perspective of what you had actually is like two huge whammies. You had premature menopause, surgical, you know, earlier surgical premature menopause. Actually, I think premature, I think you were before age 40. You'll tell me, plus a cancer diagnosis. So that's literally three big whammies. And I'd love to kind of break this down into a few parts, because I think for all the listeners, I think, you know, we could talk about these one and both separately. So premature menopause does often go with a cancer diagnosis or a high risk for cancer, but not. So let's kind of unpack this and make this our kind of first part here. So should we tackle the premature part? Should we tackle the premature part and then kind of layer the cancer part on top? Because that's so common that they do go together, but of course, sometimes it's not. And you mentioned that you enjoy, like, you know, I think that's so funny. I will never forget when this patient was super excited to see me. She'd waited like 6 months. She was like, I was expecting this like Eleanor Roosevelt's like, you know, gray haired clinician. And I bounced in like third trimester pregnant. And she was like, oh, I'm fucked.
Totally.
And I was like, no. And I still think, you know, but right here you are saying like, no, I understand. So let's talk a little bit about premature menopause. What is it? What's so special about that population? What does that population need to know?
So first of all, since your listeners know that there's so much talk about menopause these days, and that's really exciting, but that what we talk about a lot is that women have to fight to get care for just the average perimenopause, menopause. So now take that and make it extra early, and then maybe add some extra medical things in. And those women are very, very vulnerable. And they're the women, I think the most important thing is they're the women who have the most to lose from premature menopause, from menopause.
Oh, that's, let's dig into that.
To lose. Yep. They have the most to gain from appropriately treating their menopause, but yet they're the most ignored.
Yeah.
and the most written off. And it's to me at this point in time, I don't care whether it's due to cancer or any other thing. If you are removing a woman's ovaries, or if you are caring for a woman who has premature menopause for some other medical reason, it behooves you, no matter what your specialty, to really understand how that impacts your medical specialty. And if you're the gynecologist taking out those ovaries, you better damn well pre-op counsel her, and you better be very prepared to know what you're doing. Because like I recently wrote, like, imagine, and this, it just quite simply put, imagine we took people's thyroids out because they might be at risk for thyroid cancer, or they had a benign thyroid problem. Does anybody think here that we would just say, you know what, see how you feel in 6 months? If, you know, not having that thyroid is a problem, you know, give me a call and then we'll see if maybe we want to replace it. It just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. It doesn't happen. Well, it doesn't happen. And the same would go through if we, like, imagine we cut off men's testicles and said, you know, we'll see how the sex goes and we'll see how you feel. You know, it just, again, wouldn't happen.
Come back next year and just, you know, let me know.
Let me know. And, you know, I was really happy to see finally, I'm doing my, you know, maintenance of certification for OBGYN and ABOG, one of the article lists we have to read finally, because there's never anything about menopause or premature menopause, was a really interesting article about, like, what are women's experience who have premature surgical menopause, and how many of them are offered hormone therapy, and how long do they stay on it? And they added two other things. How many of them actually get bone density testing, and how many are getting lipid testing in counseling? So I'll send you the link. I think it's great for everyone to look at it. And what was shocking was that basically overall, it was like less than 50% of women with premature menopause for benign reasons. So this is not cancer. This is benign reasons. Premature surgical menopause, less than 50% were actually taking it, or offered it. And the amount of time was really short. I want to say, like, it was like the average was like 5 months, and, like, you know, it was like a very short period of time, which tells me they're not being offered it, and no one's really counseling them. Important it is to stay on it, and they probably just get lost to follow up. And then the other thing that was super shocking was the numbers. I don't have this study in front of me, but the numbers of how such a small percentage got baseline bone densities, and such a small percentage had their bone densities followed, and no one was really talking to them about cardiovascular disease. So
it's like straight up malpractice.
It's literally straight up malpractice. And
it is.
You can't be like, well, I don't really know hormones. Like, I'm sorry, then don't take out people's ovaries. Just don't do it then, because then you are responsible. If you remove them, you better have a place to send them.
Yeah.
And you can't assume that your top cancer centers or your top surgical centers or, you know, specialty hospitals actually have the resources. Because I think what people think is, well, they must be in good hands. They're being seen by this top surgeon or whatever. It's simply not the case. So
That is so infuriating. I'm so distressed by those numbers. I'll read it too. I mean, I guess I'm not terribly surprised.
Yeah.
But it's no different than diagnosing someone with diabetes and just saying, like, well, you could take this. And to also the point, like, one of the things I know you'll talk about, and I'm sure you also do, but I always tell my patients with premature menopause, like, oh, when you Google menopause or you Google hormone therapy, that is not for you. That is for those risks, those benefits, that discourse was not at all meant for you to see. But still, clinicians, and then it trickles down to patients, they lump them all together. And you're absolutely right. Like, the counseling must not be accurate. And I always, you know, I want my patients. That's why I made it a whole separate menopause type. It is not the same.
No, it's not the same. And the pre-op counseling is really, really key for these women. And they don't get it, you know? And then, and again, it's not only surgical menopause. Let's let your listeners remember, there's lots of like reasons why a woman might go through menopause early. It could be from medications, autoimmune diseases, idiopathic reasons, you know? But as a whole, they're just really, really, really mistreated and kind of ignored. And there's, and I think it's because of the knee-jerk fears caused from the Women's mm-hmm. Health Initiative. And mm-hmm. in fact, in, I think it's in this study, I pulled two studies. I'll send you can link them. Yeah. One is this one, the long-term non-cancer risks in people with BRCA mutations following risk reducing BSO and the role of hormone replacement therapy. Mm-hmm. So that article, I think this is the one that cites the fears around the WHI data, which you've done such a great job of explaining to your listeners, you know, really that was not the end all be all and, you know, major messaging problems there.
Yeah.
But it's because of that, that now we've got this generation of women with premature menopause who are just being totally mistreated, and doctors are really reluctant to give them hormone therapy.
I know.
But it makes no biological, it makes literally no scientific sense. Yeah. And I think doctors should know better. And I'm actually really disappointed with physicians and really, really disappointed with OBGYNs to not have a basic understanding that if you remove an ovary, you're removing the primary source of not only estrogen, but let's say it, Heather, testosterone. And so this is like a new thing for me, really, in getting comfortable and understanding, because honestly, we were not educated as doctors on it. And no. I think it's terrible that premature surgical menopause women are not also by default offered testosterone as part of their replacement.
I think you're right, because you said they have the most to lose and the most to gain, but they're also the most misunderstood or misdiagnosed. I know. So I want to ask you a question too about this. I see a lot of patients, let's say they do get treated. This comes up all the time, especially on like my channels, birth control pills versus hormone therapy, especially in premature menopause. What does the data actually show? I'll tell you kind of what I see or what I do, but what does the data actually show? Or if you're like, there's just not enough to know, what does your clinical experience tell you?
I mean, for me, I don't think there's any really good data that tells us like this is better. But I think like we were talking about offline, like the clinical experience and individualizing it to the patient really has to come down to, you know, one, is there any chance of fertility? So if you are premature menopause, or premature ovarian insufficiency, technically the way we call it, where you still have intact ovaries and there's a chance you mm-hmm. could possibly ovulate. There are those women. And mm-hmm. for some of those women who are sexually active, they may want the birth control pill. But, you know, from a probably physiologic standpoint, a safety standpoint, a tolerability standpoint, a benefit standpoint, I would rather use higher doses of hormone therapy or menopausal hormone therapy, but in actual true replacement doses, I think that's much more physiologic. And I think we don't have head-to-head randomized.
We never will.
That I'd rather replace her with estradiol yep. than synthetic ethinyl estradiol, or I'd rather replace her with real progesterone if she tolerates it. And if she doesn't, we've got other options. I think that makes a hell of a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, we actually do have guidance on dosing. Like, so ACOG, I think the Menopause Society, there's guidance out there about the appropriate amount. So what I see, and I know you see, is that when women are being given hormone therapy for premature menopause, they're often started at menopausal hormone therapy levels instead of hormone replacement levels. So instead of starting them on a 1 milligram, they really need probably at least 2 milligrams for adequate bone, brain, heart health, right? So I think that's a big problem too. I think there's a ton of them who do get hormone therapy who are totally underdosed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, you know, are not also concomitantly using any type of vaginal hormone or vaginal estrogen. That part of the puzzle is often you know, oh, well, you're just on the pill, or here's, you know, here's a combi patch. You're good to go. You know, you're mm-hmm. fine. And they think because they're being replaced right away with some hormone, they don't follow them as aggressively, I find, for their bone and their long-term heart health. And they're at a much higher risk, even with this replacement, of still having some of those things. I mean, obviously replacement is great. And if you're not replaced, they're at huge risks there.
Yeah.
But they're not followed from a preventative standpoint.
Which is exactly why when you first cited the lipid test, that was for the heart protection. The bone density, of course, is for bone protection. So circling back to that for some of you listeners, just to kind of close that loop there. And you're right. I totally agree. I find that the first thing I always actually say, and I think this is funny because we always say HRT, right? And the R is actually for replacement, which is actually physiologically the R. HRT, I used to get like slapped on the wrist by this for my mentor when I was in fellowship training, is really actually denotes when we're physiologically replacing hormones for premature early menopause. And actually the rest is just hormone therapy, but I say HRT all the time too. But therein lies that fact that the doses need to be higher. And birth control pills, well, I see a lot of doctors starting because for whatever reason, that seems like safer to them. Like there's this like, well, I can prescribe birth control pills. I do that all the time, but it lowers their free testosterone. It worsens genital urinary syndrome of menopause. And I fully agree. I almost always am physiologically replacing estradiol, prometrium, progesterone, and then oftentimes testosterone, just like you mentioned, that we're taking that out.
Yeah. And so you bring up a great point about how I think OBGYNs and even primary care doctors are quite comfortable with the birth control pill. But if anybody ever just sat down and looked at, like, honestly, the risks, side effects, all of that blood clot risk, all these things, I mean, you know, using physiologic levels of hormone therapy is actually probably safer.
I mean, I say it all the time.
And so, but it comes down to comfort level. Doctors are really, oh, just take the pill, you know, which is not totally wrong. But
therein lies that bias about probably stemming from the early 2000s, right? That we all have, because it's been 2+ decades. And that bias, it is so strong. And in fact, whenever I'm teaching, when I was teaching nurse practitioners and other clinicians who were postpartum nurses, et cetera, or women's health nurse practitioners, I say, you've been prescribing hormone therapy for years. And they're like, only a few times. Yeah. And I'm like, what? You know, it's funny. And I actually had like a couple people on social media say, well, are they both hormone therapy? And I'm like, okay. I mean, I don't know.
It's a hormone, and it's being used therapeutically. So yeah.
So yeah, exactly. Well, so let's kind of now shift to like, so the next group of patients is women without cancer, but who also have their ovaries removed prophylactically. So this is going to be our high risk patients. So BRCA1, BRCA2, there's lots of other high risk mutations being now noted. And these women are encouraged to have their ovaries removed, but they don't have cancer. And so, you know, this population is also really special. What are the hallmarks of this population that make them really unique?
Well, you know, what makes them really unique is one, that they are, first of all, they're a population of patients who obviously have a higher risk of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and sometimes some other cancers, you know, depending on their particular mutation. And they're trying to be proactive with their health, right? So they're presenting to be proactive. So, and then what happens is they're proactive on reducing, say, their ovarian cancer risk, but then everything else proactively goes out the window at that moment in terms of the way the medical community looks at them. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen personally, I've seen some very, very sad, tragic cases of women who have delayed having their ovaries taken out because they were so, like, I just want to hold on to my hormones because I'm BRCA positive. And once I take my ovaries out, no one's going to be able to treat me for premature menopause or just regular menopause, you know, regular age menopause. So I'm going to hang on to them. And I've watched a couple of women who are now dead because not my own patients, but out there in the public, a friend of a friend or someone I heard about we're like, yeah, you know, I'm waiting. I'm going to wait to about 45, even though the guidelines are like, we should do it earlier. And part of the reason why they waited and then later got diagnosed with ovarian cancer at a later stage, wasn't cured, was because their OBGYN, or at some time, some points, some of these top level Previvor clinic cancer centers were not being very forthcoming on what the data and the evidence tells them about the safety of them being able to treat premature surgical menopause, whether or not you have intact breasts, right? So they're not being told, it's okay. You can make the decision. You can have your cake and eat it too, I tell them. You can protect, you're done with childbearing. You can get those ovaries out, and I promise you can wake up with the patch on you and we will replace, you know, testosterone if you need it, and you don't have to suffer. And they're so afraid of suffering that they kind of just avoid it, and it's avoid the life-saving surgery. Right. The menopause, and there's no excuse. The Menopause Society in 2016 has a beautiful practice pearl on this that lays it out. It's like 3 pages long. Anybody could read it. And it and there's been subsequent, there's a couple other interesting review papers, one from just this year in 2023 from Cancer's Journal that lays it out. And there's just a preponderance of evidence that women who remove their ovaries early, taking hormone therapy does not further increase their risk of breast cancer, whether they have intact breasts or not. So it should be a moot point. So that's one really important thing. And the other thing is that enough, I think there's a lot of women out there who don't know whether they should be genetically tested for a mutation of some sort, or they tell me, oh, my mom was tested, or yeah, my family was tested. We don't have that. And I always want you as a patient to know, and I want doctors to know, that you have to ask them about UpToDate testing. You have to ask them when they got tested. I want your listeners to know, I was tested prior to 2013. My test was negative. I had breast cancer at 28. My mom died of ovarian at 54. We had no other family history. I was tested at a major New York City cancer center. Okay. I think their motto is, science over fear. No one from there ever called me back. No one ever called me back and said, hey, Corinne, did you know that there's UpToDate testing and the genetic test that we did on you, you know, back before, you know, 2010-ish, we didn't include the large rearrangement of the BRCA gene. And you should really be retested. It wasn't until I realized that I went back to my doctor and says, hey, can you retest me? He's like, well, we can, but it's really unlikely, Corinne. And of course, I'm BRCA2 positive. And guess what? So is my brother and my cousin and my aunt and my 19-year-old daughter that we just found out. And so that's okay, because I'd rather have the information so we can make good decisions. Yeah. But if I didn't push for that as a physician, I wouldn't have known. And that's just me. There's hundreds of thousands of women who think that they have been genetically tested who weren't. There's hundreds of thousands of women who were only tested with a 23andMe type of thing on their own, which only checks for like a few genes. There's lots of other genes out there. And there's a lot of people who don't ever even think of getting tested because no one takes a proper family history. Nobody. And they do it once at intake and they don't ever ask the
patient to do it again, to UpToDate it. Yep. Gosh, like that is, I'm flabbergasted and I know all of this, right? Yeah. But just hearing it, not being me, the physician, and just listening it and taking it in. I mean, it has to piss you off. It has to piss women off. And I was thinking about that science over fear. Like, why can't it be quality of life over science? Can that be my hospital's motto?
Well, yeah. And the thing is, I think that the leaders of these NCI cancer centers and the people who are you know, coming to the conferences and making the guidelines, they're like, no, we've got the guidelines. The care is being done on the ground in the community hospitals and out there. I'm like, because they're following the guidelines. I'm like, no one's following the guidelines. Oh. And in fact, some of the guidelines I think are not strong enough, and whatever, that's fine. That's my opinion. But like, no one's on the ground. It's not actually penetrating down. It's just not. When I say to people at who are leaders in the cancer world, I said, you don't understand what women who are going through either premature menopause or who are breast cancer survivors, for instance, none of them are being offered vaginal estrogen. And they're like, no, it's in the guidelines. We talk to our oncologist. I'm like, no, it's not happening. I spoke in this past fall at the Young Survival Coalition annual summit. There was about 450 women in the room, and I was talking about the sexual and hormonal side effects of menopause. And I said, let's talk about vaginal estrogen. I'm sure you guys know it's safe, it's effective, but this, you know, we've got actually lots of guidelines.
Blank stares.
They were like, people were stunned, like literally stunned. And this is an engaged community of like people, survivors who are really engaged in the YSC and, you know, tend to be quite knowledgeable, and they came all the way to a summit, a national summit, and they didn't know. Yeah. And when they go back to ask their doctors, the things that they are told are unscientific and completely outrageous. And we're only talking about vaginal estrogen here.
We haven't even started talking about the safety of systemic HRT, which you quoted before we got into this, right?
Yeah, it's a really, it's really rough out there. It's rough.
Well, and we're going to get into this as we move to part two. I know I have to leave you guys on a cliffhanger, but truth be told, I have a jam schedule, guys, but we're going to take this in part two. And, you know, I hope you've gotten a little bit of information on the premature menopause, what that means, women. We're going to continue this conversation too about women who are BRCA or high risk mutation, but don't have cancer and the options. And then we're going to get into the really juicy stuff. What about breast cancer survivors? What about, you know, your breast cancer survivorship journey? And so you definitely want to hit subscribe. Oh, haha. If you haven't subscribed to the show, now is a great time. You don't want to miss this part two with Dr. Men. And thank you guys so much for listening. I know you're on the edge of your seats. I got part two coming up next week. Bye, everyone. If I haven't already done so, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to my show. Consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Also, if you love the show, your stars or a quick review could really help other women who are searching for information on menopause and midlife around the globe find this show. If you want to work with me, consider the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. The link for that is in the description to this show. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for all your support, and I'll see you next week for a brand new episode.